Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Third down and five at the 40. Hendrickson is back in there for the Bengals. Tannehill steps forward. Popped up in the air. Intercepted. Logan Wilson's got it for Cincinnati with 20 seconds to play. A huge play for the Bengals D.
Ian Eagle on the call of interception number three for Ryan Tannehill. Three was the number, and three was the final score margin for the Bengals over the Titans, 19-16. In that game, Joe Burrow threw for 348, no touchdowns. I thought the story was actually the Bengals' defense, though, in terms of why they won. Burrow was good. He made all the throws. He's got the moxie.
He's great, man.
He's an elite player. Yeah, he's Joe Cool. But everyone kind of forgets they went out and they spent a lot of money this offseason on defense, bringing in veterans. Jadobe Awuzie in the secondary. Trey Hendrickson on the defensive front. Four or five guys who ended up being starters and having really good years this year that they spent money on. And it's all part of why the Bengals are headed to the AFC title game for the first time since 1988. They won a road playoff game. Did you know this? First time in the history of the Bengals organization they won a road playoff game this week.
I didn't know that. I know they hadn't won in forever, but man, oh man.
They were 0-7 previously. I love Jamar Chase, who posted a second straight 100-yard game in these playoffs. No rookie had ever done that before this weekend, with Chase going back-to-back over 100 to kick off his playoff career. And he was clocked at 21.6 miles per hour on that 57-yard catch. Little bubble they smoked out to him. Slips a tackle, and he gets up the sideline. That's the fastest speed anybody's run in the playoffs in over 6 years now.
Well, you see the formula, right? Cincinnati was worse off than we here in Washington were. Not that long ago, if you remember. They were a disaster. Get the quarterback. Now, there aren't that many Joe Burrows around, but they got one. And here's what they kept doing. Adding weapons, adding weapons, adding weapons. T. Higgins is a star. Now, let me back up. T. Higgins is really good. He'd be a wide receiver one for a lot of teams. He's just whisper quiet, number two, sometimes the number three in their system, went 7 for 96. Important yards, too, in there, as Jamar Chase is getting all the headlines.
He's not a first-round pick, by the way. They hit on him.
In the second round.
Yeah.
They got him. Tyler Boyd, a nice little slot player, who, if you don't cover the other guys, he'll kill you. He's been close to 1,000 yards, maybe even has a 1,000-yard season.
Best C.J. Uzama. Drop rate in the league. Didn't drop passes this year. Most targets without a drop.
Yeah, Uzama had his career year. Wonder why. You start covering these other guys, he gets one-on-one space, and he's always had a nice skill set. And Joe Mixon, again, maybe a little bit less sexy than he's been in the past, but still caught six passes for 51 yards. It's kind of your multi-dimensional back. I just rattled off four or five weapons there that everybody would love to have. That's the recipe. That's the ingredient. And you go out, and as you said, you go from, hey, nice story, we got some kids we can sling the ball around, to we can compete here because we went and got some good defensive pieces. I love how this team is built. To me, they're the blueprint. It's them and the Cardinals where I'm going, just do this. Hurry, quickly. No more wasted time. Do this thing where you keep adding weaponry. But credit to Cincinnati. Blame on Ryan Tannehill, though. Man, oh, man. Just as cushy a situation as you could be in. A.J. Brown has a fantastic game because he's excellent. He's healthy. I thought Julio Jones looked as good as he's looked since he was in an Atlanta Falcons uniform, now playing for them. I don't know how you felt about Henry. Didn't quite seem to be as, as dominant as he's been in the past.
I thought he lacked a little bit of his normal explosiveness. Yeah. And maybe he wasn't the best version of himself. But he carried the ball 20 times. I mean, he was healthy on a binary. Is he healthy or is he not healthy? Derrick Henry was healthy in the game. Foreman ended up ripping off a 45-yard run. So he had some of the bursts they were looking for. He had a couple big runs in the game. He averaged over 15 yards per carry on his four carries.
Nice little change up there, yeah.
And we haven't mentioned the fact on defense, they sacked Joe Burrow 9 times.
That's where I was going to go.
That ties the
record.
That's
the story.
For sacks in a playoff game.
You can't win a game that you sack the opposing quarterback 9 times. You got to look in the mirror. You know, the defense did its job in this game. Burrow made some throws because he's going to make some throws. Ja'Marr Chase made some plays because he's going to make some plays. You held them basically to 16 points. You add in that last second field goal after the gross Ryan Tannehill pick. But this, to me, is a story of Tennessee's offense and really Ryan Tannehill holding them back. It was a wonderful story when he took over from Mariota and they caught fire in the second half, went to the AFC title game. He was good, downright good last year. Now I think we know it's kind of a mirage because he killed them.
He lost his play caller. Yep. He lost his coordinator. Him and Arthur Smith had a really good rapport.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it takes a little while to get that back. But if we're trying to figure out, like, was Ryan Tannehill as good as he was playing or not, I've always kind of assumed this is Tannehill with all of the things going his way.
Yep.
You set the thermostat at 69. It's sunny outside. It's really nice. And you have all the furniture that you ordered on your pre-wedding registry, right? It's like the room is exactly what you want it to be. He's got great running game, really good defense, one of the best coaches in the league. They came into this game having won all 8 of their games under Mike Vrabel when they had at least 8 days to prepare. It's a sharp staff. They do a lot of things really well. And it makes it easier, better to quarterback for this team. But, you know, we talk a lot of the shows we've done about interceptions. Not all picks are created equal. You could have a 3-pick playoff game, and while you always want to protect the football, it's not ideal to have 3 picks, but you might have played really well and had 3 interceptions. Maybe a ball bounces off of a receiver's hands and into a DB's hands. You know, maybe a guy trips and falls on an outbreaking route or something. Maybe you do an arm punt where you pin a team down at the 2-yard line on a jump ball on a 3rd and 1 million or something. The 3 picks he threw were absolute backbreakers in this game. The first one was on literally the first play of the game. Ball's in the air. They kick off. Hello and welcome. We are live at Nissan Stadium.
Introducing the starting lineup. Oh, crap,
my God. Ryan Tannehill just threw a pick. 1st and 10. Play action. We're running a little play action shot middle of the field. Oh, my God. He threw a pick. Wide open Julio Jones. Late. Throw it now. Throws it. Intercepted. You see that All-22 view they showed as a replay. And the DB's like, oh, he's open. We gave that up. Wait, he still hasn't thrown it. Let me react. Now he's getting close. I'm still over there. He still hasn't thrown it. And he just throws it. Intercepted. Terrible, terrible pick. The second pick was his first pass of the second half. So really, really cool coincidence. He threw an interception on his first pass of both halves. So they come
That's
out
special.
Of
Hard to do.
Halftime. And look up that drive. Like, this is the quarterback is holding me back alarm going off in a game where it was run, and they're 1st and goal from the 9-yard line at that point. And Tannehill throws an interception. Now, I will say that I thought that was an incredible play defensively, more than it was bad Tannehill. You got to see it before you throw it. If a guy's kind of coming free off the edge, you can't throw a ball that gets batted and intercepted. That's ultimately on you. But it was a really, really good play. We've seen some of those from defensive ends in the past. But then the third one, man.
What do you see there?
What are you doing? What are you doing? It was just a killer. That decision. What you see is a good question. My thing was, please understand time and place. You're fitting a ball into a non-existent window with 28 seconds left in the game, and you're throwing the pick at midfield. You're just saying, go get a game-winning field goal. Why don't you just tell them to bring their field goal unit out and you'll spot the ball for them? It was 3rd and 5 from their own 40. Tannehill drops back. If nobody's open, you're throwing it away. If you can't, then you're taking a sack. The worst thing you can do there, worse than going to overtime in this tie game, is you cannot turn the ball over. When you're getting sacked, you better hold it with both hands, no sack fumbles. If nobody's open, you're not forcing any balls into windows. I just can't wrap my head around what he was thinking. He's driving a ball into traffic on the midfield stripe with 30 seconds left.
So many people in the area. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where if it becomes complete, we're talking about, wow, what a throw under pressure, and how cool is that? Now, I understand a little bit of result over process at times, which, you know, I always try not to do. But it's one of those things where you're not 27 for 30 in the game with 320 yards and a few tutties, right? It's already been kind of a struggle. They're in the game because of you. Have some understanding there, right? That's this team's butter, or this team's bread, rather, is not buttered with Ryan Tannehill making plays. It's a guy named Derrick Henry. Get him in position, you know? You're there to kick the field goal and kind of escape in that ballgame. But he killed him, Tannehill did. And there's kind of everything else is inescapable. This is what drives me crazy.
I would just say this really fast on
that.
Go
ahead, please.
Just to echo that sentiment. It becomes really obvious when everything else is so good for them. And they didn't run the ball great for the whole game, but they ran it well enough for sure. Defense had 9 sacks.
9.
You cannot lose that game. You tied the record. You, as you said, A.J. Brown balled. Julio Jones looked good. There are times where it becomes glaringly obvious the quarterback is the reason why you lost. I'm not saying he's the only reason. I'll never say one player. And Vrabel had a great quote where he said, as long as I'm here, we'll never have lost a game because of one guy. And I'm going to be here for a while. Like, oh, cool guy, Mike Vrabel. I like him.
I do
cool. That game, maybe one guy never loses a game, but Ryan Tannehill got really close to being the one guy that lost you that game.
It's in a tournament when I was the youngest player on a soccer team. I was playing up in age. I was playing sweeper, which is all the way in the back. And a ball comes in. It's a long ball. And I jump up to head it out. And right at the last second, the goalie yells, keeper! And so I'm already in the air, and I duck my head down. So instead of heading it normally, it bounces off the top of my head and into our goal. We lose the game. It was about 2 minutes left in the game, and it happens, right? The coach did that bit after the game's over, all gathered around. He's like, I'm proud of the way you guys fought. No one person lost the game for us. Everybody slowly turns and looks at old Danny Ruye. Yeah, I did. I did. I lost it. I'm Ryan Tannehill in this story. See what I'm saying? Like, it's
Danny
on him.
Danny Tannehill.
13 quarterback hits in addition to the 9 sacks. It wasn't as if they got sacks and then never bothered Joe Burrow again. This game was that, or it should have been. The story today should have been, what I should have been able to do coming today, be like, Grant, I know we're going to talk Buffalo, Kansas City, but we got to talk about the dominance of Tennessee's front. We got to talk about that because this is what Washington has in mind.
Yeah,
is this kind of defensive pressure?
If they do this to Mahomes, then he's not going to have a big day.
They could go to the Super Bowl with this. Can you believe the defensive pressure they put on? We don't talk enough about Jeffrey Simmons. That guy had an ACL tear coming out of Mississippi, but by God, that guy's the best defensive player. Lost, gone because of how bad Tannehill was. It's a footnote now.
There's a bunch of teams in the league who have solid quarterbacks who want to do better than those quarterbacks. Tannehill and the Titans comes to mind. Carson Wentz and the Indianapolis Colts comes to mind. Washington, if they go the route of, say, Derek Carr or Jimmy Garoppolo, is going to be just one of those teams where your quarterback's still not good enough. You're close. Maybe you get eliminated in Week 18. Maybe you lose a playoff game because someone threw a couple picks they shouldn't have. I still think that that's a huge upgrade, and I still would like to be in that tier rather than the tier where you just your quarterback doesn't give you a chance to even be there. But I think the Titans will look to upgrade. I don't know if they're in a situation where they can play in the Rodgers waters, in the Wilson pool. I don't know that they can get in on Deshaun Watson or anything like that, but if they were somehow able to upgrade, just like the Colts, I'm sure, want to do, yes, I'm interested in Carson Wentz. And everyone takes that as you like Carson Wentz. You heard that. I didn't say that. Carson Wentz is better than what we've got.
Yeah,
here.
When you're dumpster diving, another man's trash is your treasure.
Ryan Tannehill, yes, I'm interested in that. So I'm going to go, you watch that game, right? You know what Ryan Tannehill is. I do. Better than what Washington's got here. So add him to the pile. I would say the same. I know you'll disagree on this one. Jimmy Garoppolo. Will I be excited about Jimmy Garoppolo? Unequivocally, absolutely not. Not even a little bit. Am I going to be steamed up only physically because of his appearance? But it's better than what they've got here. And then the question just becomes, do you want to pay that guy? In his case, he doesn't make a ton of money at the quarterback position, but it's 10 times more than Taylor Heineke's going to make.
Yeah.
I mean, do you want to do that? Because I still, you know, my thoughts, there's a bar. You have to clear it. If you can't clear the bar, then you can't even play the game. You can't try. There's no point in any of this. And I would say Garoppolo barely, as you've seen a couple times with San Francisco, clears that bar. I don't think Heineke does. Tannehill, to me, clears that bar. Not by a lot. Wentz clears
that
bar.
He's over the threshold for you.
But you might be able, if they're really going to try to do better than Tannehill, and they've already paid him big money, I doubt they'll be able to get out of that contract. I doubt they'll be able to upgrade. Color me intrigued. But he got a massive extension. They paid him. That's what I always find funny about, like, when people get so mad about some of these quarterback contracts, you know, they talk about with Cousins or somebody else. Ryan Tannehill got massive money. Why don't we hear more about that?
Because they were in the AFC title game.
But because of the record, they weren't.
You and I both know that, but I'm telling you, that's why. They were 11-5 and 12-5 with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback. No one cares about anything other than that.
Yeah.
When people are doing the Jimmy G dance, you hear even league executives, even smart. I think Michael Lombardi is one of the smartest guys that we get the chance to talk to.
Lombardi on Jimmy G, you can't. He was in New England when they drafted him. So I think that's more of a personal thing.
Fair enough, but you'll hear smart people that do this for a living cite record.
They love that.
It's not a coincidence that teams are really good when Alex – or not really good. Teams have a winning record when Alex Smith is your quarterback.
Well, I'm going to call Ben Stanek tonight because my guy cited record in a guest appearance on the Grant and Danny radio show today. I got a bone to pick with him. He's telling me Mitch Trubisky's 23-11 in Chicago.
29-21, old
whatever
Mitch.
Whatever it was. He didn't mention that they had the number one defense in the league for one of those years when they won 12 games. Number one in the league.
Oh, Mitch. It's his house. Sleeps 20 feet away.
Mitch. So now we've gotten through all four games.
Yes.
We've done it at a rapid pace, by the way. It only took 3 hours and 20 minutes, but we did it. What a weekend. Let's clap it up for the NFL one more time.
The NFL.
Chiefs, 42-36 winners in overtime. We're changing the rules. Rams, 30-27 over the Bucks. It's a shame we wanted Tom Brady to get lucky. Come back from 27-3. 49ers, 13-10. Now that was an offensive onslaught.
Yeah, a little bit of a dud. Close game.
That was fun football to watch there.
A little bit of a dud.
It's just like trying to figure out who's going to score the next touchdown. Where's it going to come from? And then the Bengals. First time since the year of my birth.
Bengals.
1988 AFC Championship
game. Boomer Esiason was doing it, man. It's Boomer Esiason. It's Steve Wyche. It's Icky Woods.
Is Steve Wyche the right name?
Sam Wyche? Steve Wyche, the NFL Network.
Yeah.
Sam Wyche,
I think you
the
did
coach.
Your thing.
I did the thing.
I'm pretty sure you did your thing.
Starts with an S. Last name Wyche.
Your bit.
Yeah.
We're going to give you three things we think next. NFL Playoffs edition from this weekend. We make three observations. It's just three things we think in honor of Peter King. We want one thing you think. You can fill up the phone lines right now. They're open for you first time today. MGM National Harbor Listener Line, 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. One thing you think. We're Grant and Danny. You know what the shame of the NFL weekend that we watched this weekend coming and going is? We got to wait.
Got to wait.
6 days for football. And while Sunday's going to be marvelous, we got two games. We looked this up. Now I'm forgetting. I think the kickoff, it's a weird time. Sunday slate is a 2 o'clock window game, I think. And then we got a 6 o'clock after. Normally they go like 3 and 6:30 or something. I think they're doing 2:30 and 6 p.m., something like that. But now we're at this point, this lull, where I got no Monday Night Football tonight. I got no football all week long. I got no Thursday night game. Then I got nothing on Saturday. No college, no NFL ball. And then Sunday I get two. But after that, there's only one game left. Then what do I do?
You ever gone to a place like the Italian store and said, I'm going to load up this week on sandwiches. I'm going to have a sandwich for like every night. And then all of a sudden, you're sitting there Monday afternoon, you're hungry, and you eat one of the sandwiches. That was supposed to be Friday's sandwich. And then you eat another one Monday evening, and that was going to be Thursday's sandwich. Next thing you know, you eat all the sandwiches. And now you got nothing the rest of the week. We got the greatest meal of all time Saturday and Sunday. And now we got no food. Our pets' heads are falling off. We got nothing. We got to wait. It's Caps Golden Knights tonight, right?
I'll take that 7 o'clock puck drop. I may go over to that game, actually, still. Caps and the Knights right here in D.C., and the boys need a win. So let's go three things we think on Grant and Danny, 800-636-1067, on the MGM National Harbor Listener Line. We're asking you guys for one thing you think coming out of the round of eight. Let's go to Paul in D.C. Divisional playoffs. Hey, what do you think?
I got two for you. One, the old guard is over. Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Ben Roethlisberger. that era is done. Now we got the Joe Burrows and, you know, the Mahomes boy, and you got all of these young quarterbacks like Lamar Jackson and Deshaun Watson. All of that's good. Here's another thing I think I know. If Deshaun Watson say, here come to Washington, if Brian Flores was the coach, Ron Rivera will be fired tomorrow morning, and then we can sign Devontae Adams and be relevant again.
Oh, my God. He's just
playing fantasy football this offseason.
My heart started beating real fast, and I got a little schwitzy.
You might want to pay Terry McLaurin in your little master plan there at some point.
Let's do all of it.
But, I have a hard time believing Washington can get in on Deshaun Watson. That's a topic probably for another day. But there's 32 teams in this league. I think 31 of them ultimately are going to be eligible for Deshaun Watson. And I think the 32nd one's this team. Even if he's cleared, even if the improprieties, you know, end up staying civil and there's nothing legal and he's not facing any kind of arrest or anything, which at this point I would say looks likely, just because at some point, if nothing's happening, I would think there's a chance he could end up playing next year. I just think from a sheer optics standpoint, team that had the 40 women come forward and say that was a terrible place to work, league that swept everything under the rug and pretended to slap the owner on the wrist, but not really willing to even do that. If I'm Roger Goodell, I'm probably going, you guys are going to sit out the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes.
You guys are interested? That's nice. There's a room down the hall.
Anthony in Warrington, you're on the Fan. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, I want to let you know, first, I love your show. And
thank you.
Second off, is that Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback. He's going to win this Super Bowl this year, and Patrick Mahomes' stats will get better than Brady's stats, I believe.
So he's going to have to play like another 20 years to accumulate that kind of stuff? Because that's the part about Brady that we should never stop talking about.
Yeah.
As annoying as it is that he wins all the games and has a horseshoe up his tuchus and all the breaks and things, the ability to be not only okay, but to still be really good. Here's what normally it looks like. Ben Roethlisberger, Phil Rivers, you can't do it anymore. He led the league in touchdown passes this year. That's the most absurd part about this, is the longevity and how unbelievable, how high a level he's played when age claimed everybody. Peyton Manning couldn't feel his right arm at the end, throwing like 12 touchdowns and 17 picks his last year when they won the Super Bowl in Denver, right? Age gets everybody, but it hasn't gotten that dude. It's unbelievable.
First thing I think, Evan McPherson is sensational. The kicker for the Bengals. Look back at his season, the game winners that he's made. McPherson's year to this point, on the road in his rookie year, he was 18 of 18 kicking field goals. 18 of 18 kicking field goals. I'm so impressed by what he did down the stretch. He's been perfect in these playoffs. He made the kick, ice water in his veins. I mean, we had an uneven kicking situation here in Washington, D.C. this year. So to just see a guy on these huge stages in these big spots who's a rookie, seemingly anxiety-free, sans nerves, just, and he's splitting uprights over and over and over again. I've been really impressed by him. I think he's one of the best weapons nobody talks about remaining in these playoffs.
That's a good nugget. I like that one. Here's my first thing I think. That was Aaron Rodgers' last game for the Green Bay Packers. I don't want to say I'm convinced, but that's what I now believe. Looking at their cap, looking at some of the reports and different things where they basically went all in for this year. They pushed all these payments and guaranteed money and things down the line. They drafted Jordan Love with the idea that this kind of would be the last ride at some point for Aaron Rodgers. They drafted his heir apparent, as I said. They don't have many options going in the next year. I think they're going to be in for a huge reboot, and Rodgers won't be a part of it.
I think his post-game press conference made me think he's leaving. He didn't say anything definitively. It's a lot of tea leaves reading, obviously, but I took a lot of what he said as, thanks, Green Bay. It's been fun.
Mm.
Here was part of what was a lengthy, much talked about ballyhooed press conference from Rodgers after the loss.
Where did your future stand?
I mean, I did not think we'd be talking about this after this game, but, I'm going to take some time and have conversations with the folks around here and then take some time away and make a decision, obviously before free agency or anything kind of gets going on that front. But, you know, it's fresh right now. It's you know, a little shocking for sure. Definitely haven't, you know, was hoping to have, you know, a nice week after the NFC Championship to enjoy, the lead up and then start contemplating some things. So I haven't even let the moment really sink in yet.
If you're a Packers fan, I think your number one want should be that this ends quickly.
Yeah, whatever that is.
Number two should be that he comes back. But he has been a bit of a dramatic attention craver for the majority of the last calendar year. I think he's enjoying all of this. Just like Brett Favre used to when he used to, you know, drag his feet. And,
oh, he loved that.
Hey, get on a helicopter. Bring a few of my buddies
out. Give me the tight end and the kicker, yeah, and like one of my other buddies.
Come to my ranch and tell me you need me.
Convince me to come to training camp.
What's the line in Home Alone? Get on your knees and tell me you love me. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is doing whatever that is. So if I'm a Packers fan, I just want this to end as fast as possible. If you're leaving, just tell me. If you're coming back, make it known as quickly as possible. We got moves to start making here. David's in Fairfax. Hey, David, how's it going?
Great. How are you?
Good, man.
Okay, so here's what I think. I think I might know. We've just been treated to one of the best weekends of professional playoff football in quite a while. And yet, I have to say the last game ends with the lamest rule in all of sports. And there's plenty of lame rules out there. But the fact that Buffalo never gets the ball, and I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, so I've lived through some pain.
Sure you have.
But I have to say that they got to change that. And I got a 12-year-old grandson who said, why did Buffalo never get a chance? And I'm going to sit down with him, and he's going to write a letter to Goodell and say, hey, I know you don't make the rules, but get that rule committee sitting down thinking about this. So that shouldn't be the way a game of that quality ends. It's just,
without question,
it's painful.
I love it. I want to read that letter. And maybe I should write a letter to Roger Goodell as well, because you took that one right off my list. Well done. Another thing that I think that I think that I know that I think that I think that I know. It is utterly unacceptable that both teams wouldn't get a chance in the overtime period to touch the football. It's beyond not okay. It's actually a sports travesty. I mean, it legitimately is an outrage. It's preposterous. It's a joke. This needs to be amended. The only thing more amazing than that we are actually doing it this way, mm-hmm, is that there are people that defend doing it this way. I don't understand or agree with anyone who thinks that. I can't possibly wrap my head around that. I don't know how on earth you can watch that game and say, yeah, Josh Allen not getting an opportunity is perfectly fine. Because what people say is, well, your defense needs to make a play. Did the Chiefs' defense need to make a play? Or only the defense that the coin, when it lands on the ground, decides needs to make a play? It's absurd. Fix this at once. Do it this second, instantly, immediately. Wave a wand, Roger Goodell. Be the czar of the NFL. If you need the competition committee to weigh in, you fire off a text to Tomlin and Rivera and everybody else involved today, and you say, this rule must change. The soonest we can vote on it, that's when we're going to change this.
Now, you can get him into the room by telling him it's about taunting, because everyone's very excited to do taunting stuff.
Right.
Right? Get him sprinting in there and say, but first, let's fix this really, really dumb rule. And again, the just play defense folks, I encourage you to watch this game. It's called football, where nobody cares about defense, where the whole entire league, they made a decision. They said, we're about offense. We're about keeping quarterbacks upright. We're about not touching receivers in any way that's inappropriate. That means you don't grab them on the way, and then you don't hit them hard when they do catch the ball. You don't push them at any point in time. Quarterbacks can slide. If you breathe on one, you get fined. The entire game is about offense, and now you're telling me somebody's supposed to step up and play defense. Let the offenses go at it.
Is it time to fix that rule? You can weigh in if you'd like at 800-636-1067. Plus, we both still have a thing that we think coming out of the divisional round. Your observations, your things you know that you think. Right here on Grant and Danny on the Fan.
You know, you and the team have a big decision to make this offseason. Does the way this season ended and the last couple, does that affect your thinking at all?
Yeah, I mean, of course it does. But, you know, there's obviously a lot of decisions to be made. There's a lot of players that whose futures are up in the air. So, you know, definitely it'll be interesting to see which way some of those decisions go. And, you know, but I'll have the conversation with Brian and, you know, in the next week or so, and get a little bit more clarity and think about my own future and how much longer I want to keep doing this.
Aaron Rodgers leaving open the possibility of retirement. Of course, he could walk. He could stay in Green Bay. Just reinventing, reigniting the mystery a little bit. Just making sure everyone's properly intrigued as he walks off from the podium. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Danny, the last thing that you think your final observation from the divisional round.
Tell me more about running games. Tell me more about running backs. Your leading rusher in the postseason is Elijah Mitchell, averaging 3.4 yards a pop. Your number five rusher is Cam Akers, averaging 2.5 yards a pop. Two quarterbacks are in the top 10. This is a passing league. It's about passing the football effectively. Stopping the pass is nice, but who passes it the best and who's passing it the best at the moment as the postseason continues, that's the team that wins the football game more often than not. That's how you get your great predictors of who's going to the Super Bowl, who's going to conference title games, and who has a chance to win it all.
You want to do a tell me more? I'll give you a tell me more.
Tell me more!
Here's my final thing I think. Tell me more about how long it takes to build a program. Tell me more about 5 years. I need 5 years, guys. This just doesn't happen overnight. The Cincinnati Bengals were 2-14 a couple years ago. They drafted Joe Burrow. Now they're in the AFC Championship game. Now it's not just Joe Burrow. Everyone's gonna make it out to be just Joe Burrow. We all love Joe Burrow. I love Joe Burrow. Big Joe Burrow guy. It's not just Joe Burrow. It's also that they had a great free agency defensively. They signed a DB and Chidobe Awuzie, who's been great. They didn't sign William Jackson, who wasn't great. They signed Trey Hendrickson to their defensive line. They made an acquisition, and he went out, and he made a bunch of plays, and he made their pass rush a lot better. They didn't draft a guy at number two overall who had a sack for half of a season before he got hurt. So you also have to make the right moves defensively, and they did that. But the main ingredient here, the key is you have to get the quarterback. Washington chose not to draft a quarterback when they last drafted in the top three. Justin Herbert went a few picks later. Washington, last offseason, tried to get Matthew Stafford. They didn't get him, and then they decided to settle for Ryan Fitzpatrick, whose hip exploded six passes into the season, and then they rolled with Taylor Heinicke the rest of the year. You're right. It will take 5 years, I can guarantee you, if you're going to do it that way.
You do it that way.
When you do it this way, where you just kind of address quarterback as minimally as possible year in and year out, it's going to take 5 years, I can guarantee that. It doesn't have to take 5 years. And one more thing, if I could get a bonus, thing that I think we should all remember, that if the Miami Dolphins ran a halfway decent play on their two-point conversion attempt against Washington back in 2019, Washington would have had the number one pick, and Joe Burrow would be here in D.C. Now, you could tell me that we would have ruined him, too, or he wouldn't have been any good.
I'd rather find out.
You're probably right. Joe Cool would have been sitting at home watching the playoffs for the second straight year, and he'd be struggling. But we would have had Joe Burrow, and you would have had a chance. It's not like this pipe dream, like, well, if four games go differently and if this team wasn't picking second, if so-and-so didn't trade up, it's literally this simple. Two-point conversion against the Dolphins when both teams were winless on the season. The Dolphins with Fitzpatrick under center step back and throw this terrible little behind-the-line-of-scrimmage pass, like a double pass is coming. It wasn't a double pass. It was just a terribly designed pass.
It was a nothing burger pass, yeah.
It gets dropped onto the ground, luckily because it was behind the line of scrimmage, it was actually a fumble. They had to pick it up and try to run it across the line. And 14 members of the Washington football team, then the Redskins coached by Bill Callahan, make a tackle. Awesome. If that play goes for a two-yard gain and a two-point conversion, instead of picking second overall, you pick first overall, and Joe Burrow is the pick. And by the way, if they would have taken Chase Young at one, which I don't think they would have, I believe that they would have taken Joe Burrow number one, but if they would have taken Chase Young number one, then at least we could just scream every single day about how awful that decision was. But I really believe they would have taken Burrow at the top of the board.
Last thing I think every team and organization that's like, well, here's how we do it at receiver. Stop doing it that way and get speed. Tyreek Hill, Jamar Chase, Byron Pringle, Mecole Hardman, Gabriel Davis last night, speed, speed, speed. That's the whole point of everything. If you have a defense that can't handle it, you impose your will on them by threatening them with speed. No more big, slow laboring guys. Speed immediately. Speed. Attention, Ron Rivera. Speed.
Gabriel Davis is kind of one of those big, slow laboring guys.
He didn't run that great, but he's one of those dudes that everybody's like, his tape says he plays fast. So I don't know anything.
I mean, he runs a 4.55 and he's huge.
He ran by some people.
Yeah, he did. They were falling over because he did a false
His
step.
Shake was that good.
It was that crazy. Let's go to Matt in Stafford. What's up, Matty?
Hey, pick up that Sports Illustrated. Some you're
pages to about a quarter of the way through, right underneath the faces in the crowd box, I think Kyle Shanahan is the coach of the year for the National Football League. They were left for dead, and he didn't. I don't even necessarily think he wanted that quarterback they got in the first round, Jimmy Garoppolo. He's not even that great. He's a Jag. Look where they are.
Second time, by the way, Matt. So if the playoffs were included in the vote, then yeah, I'm all for Kyle Shanahan rising to the top of the pile here. It's just a regular season award, so it's not going to happen. But now looking back on just the season in its entirety, obviously Zach Taylor viewed a little bit more favorably, getting the Bengals into
rightfully
the final
so,
four.
Yeah.
But Kyle Shanahan has Jimmy Garoppolo on the precipice.
Again.
Of a second Super Bowl
again.
Appearance.
Build him a statue outside of Levi's Stadium right now.
Guy, if you coach Jimmy G to two Super Bowls, I think that's Hall of Fame worthy.
Like, he should get in before his pops does.
What if he never has to win another game? If twice you get to the Super Bowl, Jimmy Garoppolo, immediate enshrinement.
Kyle Shanahan way.
Grant and Danny on the Fan. Sam Fortier covering the NFL joins us next. Stretch run of Grant and Danny. We got a jam-packed next 20 minutes or so. On this final furlong here, we're taking you up to the Caps tonight. They play at 7 against the Vegas Golden Knights. We've got your Capitals power play coming your way. Also, yesterday's Chiefs-Bills game is going to go down as one of the greatest games of all time. It was an unbelievable experience for viewers at home watching Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes go back and forth in the most incredible 2 minutes of football, not just in recent history, but maybe in the history of the postseason. Darius has put together a little trip down memory lane for us with some of the highlights and some of the comments after the game from various players who participated. So that'll be worth your time. I'm excited to hear it. Make sure you are listening in about 12 minutes or so if you want to take part in that joyous journey back to Arrowhead Stadium. What a game it was last night. We're Grant and Danny welcoming you back on the Fan. It is time right now to go to the BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter to beat the books. Download the BetQL app today. Visit BetQL.com. Sam Fortier of the Washington Post joins us now. He has been covering the NFL playoffs. So, Sam, why don't we just start with the amazing four-game slate we just had. Of those four games, what surprised you most among the outcomes?
Surprised me most, I would probably say Cincinnati winning while allowing 9 sacks. I think Green Bay, which is the game that I was at this weekend, is another candidate just because, you know, this is the year that everything was supposed to go right. Aaron Rodgers has talked about years past. Hey, if we get that number one seed, if we can be at home in the cold, this is going to be a major advantage for us. They got that. They were healthy, and they still lost to San Francisco. So I'd say those are the two most surprising. I actually think even though the quality was incredible in Chiefs Bills, that one was probably expected to be the best game of the postseason possibly, right? So that one is probably the least surprising, although – you can talk about any time two quarterbacks do what they did, that you still got to be impressed by that.
Sam, I know you're not on the Packers beat all the time, but just generally, what were your impressions just going up there? I get the sense that there's kind of this divide. There's this split, right, among the fans who are half are kind of like, please just make Aaron Rodgers happy. There's the reason that we're in any game. Like, he's excellent. It obviously didn't play particularly well here this yesterday, but goodness gracious, the house that Rodgers built, he's incredible. The other half are going, I'm so over this, just move on. What was kind of your sense of it?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I was at Kroll's West, which is one of the places, you know, one of the restaurants right in the shadow of Lambeau. And I had a Packers fan who, you know, has lived in Green Bay, you know, his entire life since the early 60s. And he was saying that actually there's a little bit, I think, and I think this is borne out in through other conversations, but it seems like there's almost a little bit of apathy there. You know, Green Bay has had, you know, big stars that have been a little ambivalent toward the community. You know, Mike Holmgren, famously. I think Mike McCarthy was a little bit that way. And then Rodgers is a little more, you know, a couple of people described him as standoffish. So I think that they obviously would prefer to keep winning football games. They would prefer to not be in quarterback purgatory like the Lions or the Vikings, who they love to get on, you know, when they win. But to me, it's almost a sense of fatigue. You know, we were up there in week 7, I think it was, for Washington. I had several people describe it to me that way as well. Just, you know, we'd love for him to stay. We'd love for him to keep winning. But at this point, we just want a resolution.
Sam Fortier, Reed is working the post. He's been covering the NFL playoffs. And since the Washington football team season ended, he's been getting to travel and watch real high-quality football, which is a nice end-of-season treat for him after what he covered all year long. Rams 30, Bucks 27. Wasn't actually that close until late. Obviously, Tampa Bay scored 24 unanswered. What do you think this game did for Matthew Stafford? Because in the final minute, starting with a second 11 from his own 24 with 34 seconds left, you know, his team's now tied. It's kind of completely fallen apart. Four fumbles, none of it his own doing necessarily. But he had to lead them, and he made a couple of massive throws, including maybe the throw of the weekend on that deep lollipop toss to Cooper Kupp to set up the game winner.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think just to real quick to start, it's amazing to me that Tom Brady in those situations up 28-3, 27-3, whatever it is, his ability to be at his best in those moments is I think, just as remarkable as some dark magic that he has to turn the other team into the worst version of itself. That Cam Akers fumble, you're like, oh, of course that was going to happen. Tom Brady is going to, you know, obviously turn this around and get a dub and move on. But to your point about Matthew Stafford, I think this is the thing that for the last decade plus, people around the league wondered, could this happen? Is he that guy? Because he'd obviously had, you know, a very solid career in Detroit, but he never had the team around him, never got that extra push to be in the postseason, to make those big throws in these big games. And when he got traded to L.A., this was the thing that he was, you know, excited to do. This is the thing that he wanted to be in the position to. And so for him to come out and validate that, I think is really cool for him.
So let me go back to, and Sam Fortier is with us here on Grant and Dan. I want to go back to that Titans-Bengals game. There's two stories. I mean, if Cincinnati loses the game, like if Tennessee wins it and just behaves reasonably and Tannehill doesn't turn it over for the millionth time, they kick a field goal, the story is Tennessee's defensive front, unheralded, did what everyone thought Washington's front was going to do to people, right? Those nine sacks, they were unbelievable. They hit them 13 quarterback hits in addition to those sacks, harassing Joe Burrow all over the place. Of course, the story is that Cincinnati wins and they're doing something they haven't done in decades. But that Tennessee team, I think they're actually pretty good. I just think they got Tannehill at this point. How should they view things?
Well, I mean, that I think is the perfect point. They got Tannehill. And when you have committed to a guy as a franchise quarterback, I think this is the risk that you're seeing. And you've seen it in Minnesota. You saw it in San Francisco with Jimmy Garoppolo. You saw it in L.A. with Jared Goff. I think the biggest mistake you can make as an NFL team right now is committing to a mediocre quarterback long-term. I'm not saying Tannehill's mediocre, but if you are committing to a guy financially at the top level of the quarterback market and thinking, oh, he might be able to get us there, I think that's really dangerous. And so to me, Tennessee going, okay, you know, Tannehill had some Pro Bowl caliber seasons in 19 and 20. Can he be that guy to push us over the top? Can you win a Super Bowl with this guy? To me, when you throw an interception on your first pass and your last pass and you're the reason, I think that that's, you know, a huge reason why that team loses the game. If you're Tennessee, you got to go, okay, we've built a pretty solid roster. Can we afford to stick with him for another year? You know, and so to me, then you got to say, okay, the NFC Championship game, I think, is a perfect example. The Rams, you know, okay, Goff is not the guy. We're going to trade for Stafford. San Francisco, okay, Garoppolo is not the guy. We're going to give up a ton of assets to trade for Trey Lance. So the question for Tennessee, which I agree, I think they are pretty good, but the question moving forward is, how do we get a guy, how do we get a quarterback that can capitalize on this roster?
Yeah, and in that case, you're right. I'm sure they would love to upgrade. We're chasing ghosts, though, Sam. Like, Washington can upgrade and go get Tannehill pretty easily. To upgrade from Tannehill, who's fine, you know, who's solid, middle of the pack in the league among 32 starters, who are you getting? Who's available? You see people talking about this all the time, like the Colts. I'm sure they would love to do better than Carson Wentz. Who are you bringing in? I mean, it's just easier said than done.
Well, I agree. It is easier said than done. But if you have a guy with Tannehill's contract, you know, $36 million plus, counting against the cap the next 2 years, you got to say, okay, is there another Detroit out there? Is there a team that is maybe going to want to start fresh with a new GM or a new coach, or are they having a lot of turnover? Do they want to just get rid of this guy, a veteran who maybe has some questions, like a Wentz? I think this year, you're talking about that could be Vegas, that could be Seattle. Obviously, they're not going to, I think, clean house in terms of person, you know, in terms of executives, but they could be ready to move on from Russell Wilson. And if you think that Kirk Cousins is an upgrade, which, you know, that's a whole different discussion, that they may be him. But I think there are options. Obviously, there's not plentiful. And then you can talk about quarterback in the draft. But I think that Seattle and Las Vegas are two particular ones where you could say, okay, maybe that works.
What about the Bucs and all this? I mean, we talked about how, you know, the Rams had that lead. Tampa Bay comes back, and, you know, I'm sure it was Tom Brady's doing that the center snapped the ball when Stafford wasn't looking, and they got the ball back after a Brady sack fumble. Just Brady's presence alone allowed that thing to sail. Angels in the outfield style. But the Bucs are all built up for now, right? They keep kicking the can down the road, and they're sort of at the mercy of Tom Brady and company. Where do the Bucs go from here?
Yeah, the Bucs do have a little bit of cap space. They have, I believe, $20 million coming up this offseason, which gives them more, you know, maneuverability than, say, the Packers. So I think we're similarly built up to win now. But you're right. I think that the Bucs are in a tough position. And I think, you know, that roster, other than a few pieces, had pretty much the same core when Jameis Winston was there. And you saw that they did not have that success. So to me, the question is all Tom Brady, which is, I know, the easy answer, but I think the legitimate one. If Tom Brady is out after this year, then I think you got to overhaul, and you got to talk about, you know, complete, I think maybe possibly rebuild, unless you can pull another rabbit out of the hat with a quarterback, not his caliber, but, you know, in that echelon, I guess. But I think the Bucs, if they don't get Tom Brady back, will be in trouble. But if they do, then, you know, maybe try to keep this thing going one or two more years.
Sam, who do you think wins the two games this weekend?
I want to pick against San Francisco because I think the Rams are good and they have a better quarterback, but I was in Dallas and I was in Green Bay, and that rushing attack, you know, the way that they use Deebo Samuel, that defense and what they're capable of doing, it's hard for me to pick against them. So I think I'm going to say San Francisco. And I also want to say that anytime a team is trying to restrict ticket sales by region and saying, you know, we don't want SoFi taken over by the 49ers, I think that's a good mental edge going in. And then in the AFC, I mean, I think that one's got to be Kansas City. I think you saw the best game in the AFC this year last night, and there's no reason to expect the Bengals, while surprising, while building towards something, are going to be able to knock them off.
Sam, thank you, buddy. Always appreciate the time. Dude, have a great week.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
See you, man.
Great spot, as always, Sam Fortier. Check out his work in the Washington Post. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, you're going to hear our little trip down memory lane Darius put together on yesterday's incredible classic. The instant classic, one of the greatest games we'll ever see. The Chiefs and the Bills going back and forth. Vic's in Akakik. Vic, you're on the Fan. What's up, buddy?
Danny, what's up, y'all?
Hey, dude.
How you been?
I'm pretty good, man. And Grant, it feels good for you to ask me how I've been. I've been calling the station for over 10 years. Man.
I don't know. What was that bit?
No, it was good. It wasn't a bad thing. It just I've been calling since I was like in my early 20s. So it was like it's kind of like I know y'all, but I never met.
Oh,
y'all,
cool. I thought you were like I'd never heard of you.
Yeah.
So you're saying it's good to hear from you again. Go ahead.
No, it's good. It's cool. I've had to de-escalate my emotions from how I felt about what we call the Washington football saga. I am not at the point yet where I want to say that it doesn't matter who we draft or what acquisitions we make in the offseason, because our coaching staff is fugazi. That is my slang term for saying that we suck. We're not good. We're not effective. But I don't want to say it just yet, because I believe that Ron has enough athletic integrity and professional integrity to try to make this thing right. The first name that comes to my mind thinking about quarterback, and I've been thinking about this for 2 months, is Sam Howell. I believe we can get Sam Howell at the draft pick that we have.
I think so.
Definitely.
We may be able to say it again.
I think so. I agree with you.
We agree with you. He's available at 11.
Yeah. I definitely believe we can get him. He's a pretty prolific quarterback outside of this year. That most recently, he destroyed the numbers. In his freshman and his sophomore year. His junior year wasn't that good, but I believe it's because he played on a very bad football team. And to get what he got out of that, I still believe it showed his talent.
And he's one of – thanks for the call, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
When you look at the class this year that's coming together here, there's going to be potentially four guys that go in the first round. Funny to think of, because we're all saying this is a terrible class. But there have been two different players mocked to Washington at 11, just to know, by the way, by two different mock drafts here, as the first quarterbacks off the board, which tells you how little consensus there is, I guess is the word. Malik Willis, who Mel Kiper had going to Washington.
Who he loves, yeah.
And the other one I saw was Kenny Pickett. And that was, I think, The Athletic Dane Brugler.
Yeah, I think I saw CBS head Matt Corral. So you see the vibe here.
I mean, it's like yeah. 11 overall, first quarterback is three different guys. Yeah. That's where we are at. All right, yesterday, this game was an all-timer. And I texted Darius on the way, and I said, you know what would be good? I want to relive that game. Why don't we put together something audio-wise for people driving around so they can just close their eyes if they're not driving and go back to last night, because we're going to want to do that from time to time. It was that good. So here it is, our trip back to yesterday, one of the greatest games ever. Three lead changes in the final couple of minutes. Two quarterbacks going for 300 yards, three touchdowns, 70-plus percent passing, no turnovers, first time ever. It was the best game we'll see this postseason.
Fourth down and 13 yards from the Kansas City 27. Shotgun snap. Josh looks, pumps once, fires a strike into the end zone. Man wide open. Touchdown! Gabriel Davis, touchdown Buffalo. A laser from Josh Allen. A touchdown for Buffalo, and they take the lead with a minute 54 to go.
And then you look at outside, our guys are making plays, unbelievable catches, getting bees involved. Gabe making some unbelievable catches there. Obviously, four touchdowns. Ethan, you went 8 for 200-something. But that's video game numbers, you know.
Mahomes over the middle. Cut Tyreek Hill at the 45. Angling right, 40. 35, Jeter. 25, 20. 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Kansas City. A 64-yard touchdown.
He made plays. Everybody did, but guys like Tyreek and Trav made plays when it counted, and they get so much attention every single week, and then they just continue to battle, and they battle, and I mean, they make plays when it counts, and they did today. I mean, the play to Tyreek and then the play to Trav, those are two players on earth that can make those plays.
From the 19 in 17 seconds. Down the middle to the end zone, and there it is! Touchdown number 4 on the night for Davis.
I talk about this all the time, but you know, when your number's called, you have to make the play, and I knew that it was going to be a night like that tonight, especially knowing that we have guys like, you know, Stephon Diggs and Cole Beasley that will be getting double more often than I would. So I was just prepared for anything coming my way, and I was able to, again, you know, make most of the plays that were called.
I need about 15 yards to have one of those long range Hail Mary kicks. Gotta throw it right away, right now to someone in the middle. Down the middle! Oh my goodness! It's gonna be a 48-yard attempt! Only 48 yards! That's what it'll be!
Just when Kelce moved his leverage inside, I was like, he's gonna throw this right here over the middle quickly.
And how do you let him get that open?
We're gonna go get in field goal range. I mean, that's all we could do at that moment, was try to find a way to get in field goal range. And we had that belief. We had the belief that we were gonna do it. Take it back to the year we lost the AFC Championship game. We got full range in like 18 seconds or something like that. You have to have that belief. If you're not going to go down fighting, then you don't deserve to be here. And we knew that if we could just give ourselves a chance to get in Butker's field goal range, he was going to knock it in, and he did.
49 yards to send it to overtime. Harrison Butker. I'm so nervous. So hundreds of thousands around the planet. The kick is good! It's going to overtime! Mahomes has hit his last 8. Looking to the end zone for the win! He caught it! Ball game! Chiefs to the championship game!
Listen, I mean, we just all were part of one of the better wins, better games, I should say, in the National Football League. And we were lucky to come out on that end of it. Listen, I mean, it was a great game.
Yes, it was, Andy Reid.
Just perfect.
We thank the two participants of that game. And Darius, well done. Very, very nicely put together here. Little trip down memory lane. It is time to get ready for the Caps matchup this evening. Speaking of reminders, remember when they played the Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup?
How did that go?
It's time for Granddaddy's Power Play, presented by American Standard Heating and Cooling and MidAtlanticComfort.com.
Better for Washington than for Las Vegas.
Indeed, sir.
The Caps are 23-10-9, and they are trying to get their act together. They've been playing a little bit better here over their last couple games. They get healthier. They get a couple of players back, which is going to be nice. Coming off of a 3-2 overtime win on Saturday against the Senators, that was a game in which Alex Ovechkin scored 28 and 29 on the season for Ovi. Dirty goal in front of the cage and a nice little timing play on a one-timer from home plate. And then in the overtime period, they're able to get their second OT win in as many tries. Nicholas Backstrom,
what a goal that was,
doing the honors. Pretty goal from him, hands goal, but Backstrom is coming to life here. He had just kind of been listless, and I felt like they needed more out of him. You got three centers on this team that have a chance to be really good.
Mm-hmm.
And when all three of them are going, the Capitals are hard to beat. Backy was the guy that you really wanted to get more production from offensively. Couple of goals last few games. You're starting to see Backstrom come on as he gets his feet under him. He's getting his sea legs under him.
Yeah, you remember how long he was out and just how, you know, weird everything has been this year for him. Vegas comes in having lost three of their last four, but they're in first place in the Pacific Division. They're still formidable. That's still a pretty good club. Tough test tonight for Washington.
Puck drop set for 7 o'clock this evening at Capital One Arena. I think I'm headed over that way, as a matter of fact.
Get you some.
It's been a little while since I've gone and seen the Caps, so I will fix that. That, boys and girls, is your power play on Grant and Danny.
It's time for Grant and Danny's Power Play, presented by American Standard Heating and Cooling and MidAtlanticComfort.com.
There it is. That's the one. I knew you had it in you. Danny, no football tonight. Caps at 7, going to be taking center stage. What's the chance you go back, you watch a couple of highlights from this weekend?
Oh, tonight?
What's the chance you throw on that DVR, you go back and look at a couple
pretty
of
good
games again?
And then I end up on a highlight journey. Next thing you know, I'm watching Juan Soto carry his bat around off of Justin Verlander. I'll probably watch Howie Kendrick ding the foul pole, maybe hit one off Joe Kelly. I don't know if there's enough time.
Those are the best kinds. Caps hockey about 6:45 right here on the Fan. Puck drop 40 minutes away. Grant and Danny saying so long. Thanks to Darris, Ryan, great job. As always, we're back at it at 2 o'clock tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.